Finally, Ed Wilson was on his way. 25 years old, tall and lanky, the upper range of his hearing gone since his teens, his right eye ruined in a childhood accident, half deaf and half blind. Outwardly, he was a polite, soft-spoken product of Gulf Coast, Alabama, the first in his family to graduate from college. But behind the well-mannered finish, he was as tough as nails, as bright as the evening star, and no man's fool. He would become one of the half-dozen greatest biologists of the 20th century. In the new century now advancing, he would lead the charge to save what's left of wilderness. Half the earth, he said, not only for the experience of wilderness, but also for the millions of species large and small, many of them not yet even named, in danger of going extinct forever. If they did, he taught, they would take with them their supporting strands of the great web of life, unraveling the world. Trees can be replaced. Species, having evolved into being across millions of years, are irreplaceable. For now, a fresh-minted PhD, just setting out, his life work before him, young Wilson was bound for the South Pacific to collect ants. Entomology was his field, insect biology, and ants were his specialty. No one had ever systematically collected ants across the vast sweep of the South Pacific. For ant specimens, many Pacific islands had never been explored. The new frontier in 1954, after James Watson and Francis Crick's great 1953 discovery, was the structure and function of DNA. Biologists everywhere had run to their labs to inform their science with chemistry and physics. Wilson was deliberately running the other way. "If a subject is already receiving a great deal of attention," he explained his strategy later, "if it has a glamorous aura, if its practitioners are prize winners who receive large grants, stay away from that subject." Wilson was an explorer at heart, had been since he was a small boy. Rather than focus his work on one species, as most of his peers would do, he preferred to break new ground, find the big nuggets, assay them, and move on. If he'd started his life as an only child in the Gulf Coast South, chasing down snakes and butterflies, he'd arrived at Harvard for graduate study in 1951 as a certified prodigy. In a vacant lot in Mobile, Alabama, when he was only 13 years old, he'd been the first collector in the United States to spot the invasion of the pestilential red imported fire ant, Solanopsis invicta, transported from Argentina as a ship stowaway. 7 years later, as an undergraduate at the University of Alabama, he'd published his first scientific paper. Avoiding the crowd was a risky strategy, one that would reward him repeatedly across a long, successful career, but would also vex him with major challenges. "Take a subject instead that interests you and looks promising," his advice continues, "and where established experts are not yet conspicuously competing with one another, you may feel lonely and insecure in your first endeavors, but, all other things being equal, your best chance to make your mark and to experience the thrill of discovery will be there."